Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
On WNYC, and while the Connecticut primary is over, election season is only heating up. The next big day on the calendar is September 14th, primary day in New York. And yesterday, the state and city released the names of the primary candidates who are set to appear on the ballot. So here to take a closer look at which candidates New York voters will have to choose from in September are WNYC political reporters Bob Henley and Ozzie Pabra. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Let's start with Charlie Rangel. Yesterday on the floor of the House, he defended himself against ethics charges and said he isn't going anywhere.
Don't leave me swinging in the wind until November. If this is an emergency, and I think it is, to help our local and state governments out, what about me? I don't want anyone to feel embarrassed, awkward. Hey, if I was you, I may want me to go away, too. I am not going away. I am here.
I love that sentence construction. I might want me to go away, too. But I actually want to play one more Rangel clip from his speech on the floor yesterday, because here he specifically references the timing with respect to primary day.
Well, the Ethics Committee will be leaving for members to be able to work in their districts and to get reelected. And I'm having a primary that I have to wait until after my primary to find out when the Ethics Committee intends to have a hearing. And then that hearing comes just before, maybe, the general election.
Bob Henley?
This really goes to the lack of transparency of the process. To this, a congressman has a point. One of the members of the Ethics Commission was asked, on live radio, do you have a sense of when you might actually have this proceeding? And the House member was...
This trial, in
this
effect.
Trial,
a
right.
House it's ethics not, trial.
Right,
Charlie
right.
Rangel.
It's not clear when it has to happen, what the time frame is, what the fuse is on it. It's not like... So for Rangel, there is this kind of, and even for voters, there's a sense of ambiguity.
And isn't this hearing actually set to convene on September 13th, which is one day before the primary?
Well, I think that the key question here is when would they actually come up with their finding and actually vote on it? Because that's the question is, once they take the hearing, do they immediately have to take a vote? I mean, that's the question.
According to the ballots released yesterday, there are five other Democrats running against Rangel in this primary. Their names are Joyce Johnson, Vincent Morgan, Adam Clayton Powell IV, Jonathan Tessini, and Ruben Vargas. Some of these candidates are better known than others, obviously.
Right. It looks to me like that Adam Clayton Powell's grandson, after the Washington Post story, is clearly getting the traction. People like the kind of, I think you called it, Ozzie, the Shakespearean arc of it being that, of course, Rangel had deposed
right.
Adam Clayton Powell to get that seat.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of great. Powell is trying to distance himself from that kind of narrative that he's just avenging the loss of his father, although it would be great if we could just write about that all day. He actually has an interesting kind of background. He was a city councilman. He was an assembly member. He got into some legal troubles, which actually didn't pan out to be as big as the headlines, but still there was a lot of damage done. There's, you know, Vince Morgan, the former aide to Rangel, who's now running against him, who's kind of explicitly saying it's time to pass the torch. You know, Rangel represented the district, you know, what it was 40 years ago. I sort of embody what it is today. Joyce Johnson, the only woman in the race, she kind of reminds everyone at every opportunity that she was an early Obama supporter, something that actually surprisingly wasn't as popular in the district as you might think. It was a district carried by Hillary Clinton. And then Jonathan Tessini, you know, he was kind of the darling of the left when he challenged Hillary Clinton on an anti-war platform in 06.
He's a labor activist. He ran in a Democratic primary for U.S. Senate against Senator Hillary Clinton in 2006.
Which she ignored entirely.
Yes. And he says he succeeded because he did manage to get 25% of the vote, even under those circumstances.
Is there, how many more do we have left on this?
One more. Ruben Vargas. He's a person who ran for the seat previously. He actually ran as a conservative. He'd also run for the city council. He didn't get too many votes. He lost that city council race to Adonis Rodriguez. So he's a person who's sort of like a perennial kind of candidate. He's not expected to get that many votes. But each additional candidate that Rangel faces, like the more crowded the field, the better his chances are, I think.
Well, that's a big thing here, right? Even if there's dissatisfaction with Rangel and suspicion of him around the ethics charges, if people are kind of tired of Charlie Rangel, with all these names on the ballot, it's going to be much harder for him to lose.
What also puts a premium on organization, if you have like a 20% turnout, and remember we only have a statewide ballot in the Democratic primary for attorney general. That's the race that's generating a lot of interest. So there's a lot of fascination about looking at what impact that'll have on a race like this. How successful are the attorney general candidates, the five-way field, in turning out their base supporters? And will that have an impact for Rangel? I mean, Ticini has some significant experience organizing a statewide, albeit unsuccessful, Senate bid. Also, the changing nature of Harlem. That's the other thing that's going on here is Harlem is actually a more diverse community than we historically think of it as being overwhelmingly African-American.
And the district is diverse. We talked about this on yesterday's show. That district really spans from the mostly white Upper West Side through Harlem, through the mostly Latino Washington Heights, and up into Inwood, including some largely white areas.
Right. It is really kind of interesting to hear people talk about the district. For shorthand, a lot of them say Harlem. Well, Harlem actually makes up a portion of the district. It goes all the way up, you know, to like Washington Heights, where people don't normally associate it with the district. And there's also at least one other factor that's kind of happening that's a political reality is that one of the candidates running for attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, is giving up his state Senate seat in order to make that race. So that state Senate seat, which sort of overlaps in some parts with the district, is also going to generate a lot of voter interest.
And let's talk briefly about that race, Ozzie. Mm-hmm. That's a vacant seat because Eric Schneiderman is running for a state attorney general, and several people are vying in a very contested primary.
Yes.
And, of course, in this case, because it's such a Democratic Party district, the primary is the election.
Right.
Right. So who's trying to move into Eric Schneiderman's state Senate seat on the west side?
There is Adriano Espaillat, an assembly member. He's been there for a long time. He's sort of been the companion legislator in many respects to Schneiderman.
Schneiderman's backing him, right?
Right. He has he's sort of like the establishment candidate. And one of the tricks for him is to sort of garner the sentiment that Albany needs to change while still running on his record of having been in Albany. Now, granted, he was in the assembly majority, which, you know, by all accounts functions a little bit better than the Senate Democratic majority, which is only held by one or two seats, depending on how people feel that day.
I know it's traditionally considered a move up to go from the assembly to the Senate, but we're talking about the New York State Senate.
Right. Reputational issue here.
That's right.
Right. There is Anna Lewis, who had run for the council previously. I believe she lost to Gail Brewer. She's sort of, you know, like the good government kind of activist, and she is trying to keep the focus on policy and not get into the whole like endorsement game, which is sort of, you know, one of the things that you can do if you're not expected to get as many endorsements is you can sort of try to put the focus on the substantive issues. And then there is Mark Levine. He, I believe, is the founder of the Barack Obama Democratic Club uptown. He's also a person I'd met with him once, and one of the things that stuck out to me was that he speaks a number of different languages. I believe it's Hebrew, English, obviously Spanish. He might have founded a community bank of some sort, mm-hmm. and he's also a math teacher. So this is a guy who has like a pretty impressive background, knows kind of politics, and has like his own political base out there.
So that's for that state Senate seat that Eric Schneiderman is leaving on the west side. Let's talk about the governor's race. Obviously, Andrew Cuomo is a Democratic nominee. The ballots released yesterday, Bob, show Rick Lazio running in the Republican and conservative primaries.
Right. Poor guy can't catch a break.
He's got a challenge on both of these lines, right. And the conservative line matters. Because
of the synergy traditionally
politics
of the Republican conservative line. I was at the Conservative Party convention where the leader, Mike Long, managed to get the majority of votes for Rick Lazio, the Republican. But there was a contingent, very strong there, that really felt that Lazio, because of his pro-choice and other aspects of his role, historic role in Congress, really disqualified him as a true conservative. So they came up with this upstate chairman, I guess, from Erie County, Ralph Lorigio, who is actually is on the ballot and is going to make Lazio earn that designation. Then we also have the much more financially well-funded, self-funded campaign of Buffalo businessman Carl Paladino, who can, I mean, at the convention, the Republican convention gave just a real old-fashioned kind of, I don't know, it sounded like a cross between Buford Pufford and, you know, he said, give me a baseball bat and I'll clean out Albany. And there was kind of like a stunned silence in the room.
Yeah. So Carl Paladino hoping to get that Republican nomination from Lazio, but also hoping to rival the conservative line by creating a new party called the Taxpayers Party. Does that mean that both Lazio and Paladino are going to be on the general election ballot despite whatever happens in September's primary, that is assuming Lazio wins?
It's kind of interesting. Technically, yes, and then sort of political reality, it's unclear. So Lazio has so Lazio believes he will be on the conservative party line, and he has said if he loses the Republican line, he is running through November on the line that he has, which is exactly what Mike Long and conservatives want to hear. Now, Carl Paladino has kind of changed his message a few times.
Right.
He had initially said that he, too, will run through November no matter what line he is on, even if it means only running on the taxpayers' line. Now, what that does is it contradicts what he had said earlier, which is, I don't want to be a spoiler for Republicans that enable Andrew Cuomo to get in. So if he takes away that argument, is he going to run on this line that he created that other people are also running on?
We're looking at who has now actually gotten on the ballot, because the deadline for submitting petition signatures was a few days ago, and now most of these have been certified by the state. Who's actually going to be on the New York State primary election ballot on Tuesday, September 14th? And we're going race by race. We've got a couple more to do. And our guests are WNYC political reporters Ozzie Pabra and Bob Henley. Bob, over the last year, there were any number of possible candidates to run in a primary against Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who, of course, was appointed, Harold Ford, Carolyn Maloney, Jonathan Tessini, Carolyn McCarthy, but they all dropped out of the running, Congressman Steve Israel. And for a while, it looked like Gillibrand would go completely uncontested to that nomination. But a few weeks ago, a woman named Gail Good, an attorney from Brooklyn, submitted her petition, and it looks like she is going to be on the ballot as released yesterday by the State Board of Elections.
Right.
What do we know about Gail Good?
I have to say, looking at the website, a woman of substance, a former assistant DA in the Bronx, strong proponent on gun control, makes a real point to try to contrast her position about gun control with the past historical positions of Kirsten Gillibrand when she represented an upstate community when she had 100% approval rating from the NRA. Also, Good is going after Gillibrand's, again, legacy positions on immigration, which tended to be more conservative, and also the issue of the flip-flop on gay marriage. So she seems to be, whether or not she'll get her message out remains, because it is about a question of money in a statewide race and even having an opportunity to get your issues put forward. I mean, this program may be maybe the last time that, you know, you ever get to hear her name, because it's so hard to get traction.
And then there are three Republicans who are running in a primary to challenge Gillibrand in November.
Right. And this is a real we have Joseph J. DiGuardia, who has the conservative nod. He's a former congressman.
DiGuardia,
right. Then we have
And people will point out the father of American Idol judge Kara DiGuardia.
Right, exactly. Bruce Blakeman, former MTA and Port Authority commissioner, a lawyer, former Nassau County legislator. He got the nod and designation at the Republican convention. And then there's David Malpass, a former chief economist with Bear Stearns. He also earned enough delegates back at the convention to get on the ballot. But DiGuardia actually balloted, petitioned to get on the ballot. So this is quite a contest for the opportunity to take on this person that has never actually been elected to the seat she holds.
Any race we haven't talked about, Ozzie?
There's a congressional race on Manhattan's east side, which also extends into Queens, which is Carolyn Maloney versus Reshma Soojani. So there's a primary there, and a lot of the argument is about whether or not it's time to change, whether or not Maloney is a vociferous enough advocate. There isn't as much policy difference.
So Johnny is kind of pro-banking industry, right?
Right.
She thought Maloney was too tough on New York's leading industry, the finance industry, with the credit card bill of rights and things like that.
Right, right. And that resulted in a front page Washington Post story, which Sujani sort of went into damage control to sort of defend against, because it was so unusual to hear a candidate of that nature kind of defend Wall Street so vociferously.
And we know that there are five Democrats running in the attorney general primary, so I guess no surprise here. Richard Brodsky, Eric Schneiderman, Sean Coffey, Eric DiNallo, and Kathleen Rice.
Yep, that's all came through as advertised.
And, you know, maybe it's worth mentioning that this may be the last partisan primary in New York State, because the Charter Revision Commission that Mayor Bloomberg has appointed may recommend nonpartisan primaries for the future, and the voters may have a chance to approve or not that proposal
just for
in
city
November.
Races,
right?
I don't think that could have an impact on statewide races.
Oh, right.
I don't think.
I see. Only for.
I mean, they may have grand designs. But
that would be for mayor and city council,
right,
like Congress and U.S.
No,
Senate.
The two-party system's not leaving Albany anytime soon.
Right. And there's talk that the mayor is not going to push as hard for it because he doesn't think it's going to pass. And some of the supporters of it are saying, you know what, it's probably not going to make it.
And is this when the brand new non-clunky lever voting machines are going to debut?
Oh, my Lord. Okay, I'm going to confess. I took the practice test. I'm going to admit it. I cover politics. I've done this for years. I'm going to admit this. Hopefully my boss won't be too mad at me. I took the ballot test. I filled out the large new ballot. You could do it by hand or an electronic.
There's coloring involved, Brian.
And I neglected to read it closely. I neglected to turn it over and find the ballot question on the back. And on my first try, I had the whole thing wrong. Now, what's funny is that it's what voters are going to get are a large ballot. Imagine a legal size notepad that you kind of see in your office. The printing is somewhat small. Some people have complained. The design is a little bit kind of unusual. But what's interesting is that you can fill out the ballot by hand, which requires, you know, reading paper, which I don't do too often. I do, you know, Blackberries and computers. Or
he's a totally modern Aussie.
Totally, almost too modern. But you also have another option, and I don't know if election poll workers are telling voters this properly, and if voters know this on their own. But you have an option to take your paper ballot, submit it to a second machine and walk through it as if you're at an ATM. It works. It worked pretty well for me. It was pretty simple. And then it fills it out for you, and it doesn't let you pass without saying, hey, here are all the options. Here are all the races.
Let's pray for a low turnout.
You will get your prayers answered, no doubt, if that's what you're praying for. You know, we did leave out one race, and I think it's really important that we mention it, and that is that there are two people on the ballot to run against Pedro Espada for his state Senate seat from the Bronx. And obviously, he's the Senate Majority Leader. He's very powerful. He's got, ethics violation charges against him.
Just some baggage.
And so is this a real race for Pedro Espada?
This is a very real race. There is a lot of labor and Democratic establishment activists who are lining up behind Gustavo Rivera. But he is not the only challenger. There is another person who's a member of Community Board 8. They're going back and forth over, you know, petition challenges and blah, blah, blah. So so there might be some local traction with a second kind of candidate just distracting people, because what Democrats really wanted was a one-on-one fight between Espada and a challenger.
And I think the third name is Daniel Patternacht.
Yes.
So we will see where that goes. And if he gets his petition signatures challenged, you say that's happening. So to be determined. All right. WNYC political reporter Bob Henley, WNYC political reporter Ozzie Paber, thank you both very much. We'll be talking a lot between now and September 14th.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how to help Pakistani flood victims without inadvertently giving to terrorist groups. Stay with us.